It's Tuesday, March 9th. This is Jeff Schwartz, and this is Jeff Schwartz of Smart on You. Welcome back, everyone. We took a two-week hiatus, had a little vacation, a little downtime, but I am ready to come back talking about football. Football never sleeps, obviously, with all this quarterback drama, free agency coming up, the franchise tag, the draft. Everything, we'll cover it all here. Of course, we record an entire podcast, and then Dak Prescott gets paid by Dallas Cowboys. So before we get to Mina, let's talk about Dak Prescott getting 4 years, $160 million. Most guaranteed money for a quarterback, most signing bonus for a quarterback, $75 million in year one. First off, I am very happy for Dak Prescott. I hate to see a player get hurt before he has gotten his money. I hate to see a player get hurt no matter what. But in this case, a franchise quarterback, fourth round draft pick. Yes, he made a lot of money in year one. I get that as one year franchise tag. But nonetheless, very happy to see him get paid. Very happy to see him get paid. Love when any player gets paid. And we'll discuss whether or not it's worth it or what in a second. But first off, very happy Dak Prescott got paid. But the Cowboys, oh boy, they cost themselves a lot of money here. $40 million a year. If you count the franchise tag from last year, it's still near $40 million a year for Dak Prescott over 5 years. And they should have signed him much earlier. Should have made him a priority much earlier. After the 2018 season, his third year in the NFL, they're allowed to do a deal with him. It's a fourth round draft pick. He started 3 years, made the playoffs twice, won one playoff game. Could have signed him. Would have been a lot cheaper. Maybe $30 million a year. Maybe $28 million a year. Could have got it done. Didn't do it. Okay, that makes sense. Maybe, right? Third year. We're not ready yet. We'll go one more year. One more year. So heads in 2019. Cowboys go 8-8. Not Dak's fault. Fifth in EPA. Ninth rated by Pro Football Focus. Not his fault. Should have signed him after 2019. Everyone said, sign Dak Prescott. I said the Cowboys signed DeMarcus Lawrence and Jalen Smith and Zeke Elliott. You're like, what are you doing? Sign the quarterback. And the impasse was length of contract. Dak won a four-year deal. Cowboys won a five-year deal. Money, they said, was about the same, $35 million a year. And I contend, I still think I'm right about this. At the time, the Cowboys did not think, they thought Dak was their franchise, but they were not sold 100% on Dak Prescott. And I'll give a couple reasons why. One is that we see with Jared Goff or Carson Wentz that when teams want to get a deal done with their quarterback, they get a deal done, whether that's capitulating on years or money. They just find a way to get it done. We've locked a guy in to a deal. And the Cowboys just didn't do that here. They wouldn't budge. And I get it, precedent, whatever. But if you're a quarterback, I think you budge, right? The Chiefs' 10-year deal with Mahomes, never done before. Now, I mean, in 4 years, that's a great deal for the Chiefs. But nonetheless, they didn't do what they normally do. Unconventional. When you have a quarterback, you try to keep him there as long as you can, especially if you believe in him. And then Mike McCarthy, the new coach, reported that he didn't call Dak Prescott for a week after he got the job. That to me is really odd and shows a lack of support from McCarthy. Think about this. You have to imagine that Mike McCarthy, in his interview with Jerry Jones, they spent the night together at his house, that Dak had to come up, right? There's no way that you interview for that job and do not have a plan for Dak Prescott. After that entire meeting, you get the job. You would think your first call was to Dak Prescott. Hey, man, got the job. Glad to be here. Let's work together. But it wasn't. It wasn't. And that, to me, I said a million times, struck me as, you know what? Maybe we're not all in on Dak Prescott. Maybe we're not all in. They should have been. Could have gotten a lot cheaper. So 2020 happens. Dak Prescott gets hurt, breaks his leg, and the Cowboys see life without Dak Prescott. What's that going to be like? Heading into this offseason, they could have franchised him. The reason why the franchise tag is not good in this instance. And I think the franchise is very team friendly. So there's many opportunities to put on players and it very much helps teams. But here's why I think for the quarterback, it's not great. It's the one position where you love to have long-term stability. And you love to spread that long-term stability as far as money over multiple years. And the franchise tag is one lump sum in one season. And so if you're planning for the rest of Dak's career in Dallas, or maybe just planning for the next 4 or 5 years, 6 years, you want to know what that cap number is going to be to prepare the team and build the team up around him And a one-year deal doesn't help you with that. Now, you can obviously project out what a long-term deal might be, but a franchise tag doesn't help him. And from Dak's point of view, who got hurt this year, he don't want a franchise tag either, right? He wants to be able to get this long-term security. So doing a deal made sense. And in the end, again, Dak Prescott could have been had for $30 million probably after 2019, for $35 million after last season. But instead, now the Cowboys paying $40 a year. $40 million a year. Good for Dak. Again, it's a ton of money. Second only to Pat Mahomes' average annual for a quarterback. And look, I don't know if Dak is, you know, going to win a Super Bowl for them, but the next quarterback up always gets paid, and they get paid more than the guy in front of them. Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield are going to get a lot of money too this offseason. And the contract value is now set on what Dak got. I mean, there'll be a chance that they get paid more than Pat Mahomes pretty soon. Someone will get paid more than Pat Mahomes in a couple of years. It's the way it is, the way these contracts work. Dak has a no trade clause as well. So he's there for 4 years, and he'll be a free agent after that. Fantastic. Good for him. Adam Schefter reported that he thinks that part of the reason why this deal was done, at least ownership or someone had told him that this is a good sign that the salary cap's going up in a couple of years with the new TV deals, maybe even next year. I mean, this, you know, this deal at $40 million a year, let's just use that number. I don't know what the cap hit is in year one. You know, that's like 22%, 23% of the cap this year. Obviously, $40 million, if the cap rises by $20 million, is a lot less of a hit. To them, it's only at 20% now. I mean, it's just a lot lower of a hit. And maybe they're pricing this into the deal they did. But the Cowboys, they got their guy, happy for Dak, but whew, they spent a lot of money on him. All right, with that, we'll get to Mina Kimes. Mina, how you doing?
You know, I'm good. I'm good. Everyone keeps asking me that because of the big Russell Wilson controversy, like in a very sensitive manner, but I'm handling it all very well.
We'll get to that in a second because that is definitely a topic that we will discuss. But you just got done with your first full year, correct me if I'm wrong, like covering NFL every single day of the week on NFL Live. How did that experience go, having people hear your words every day on television and the feedback you get from that?
It was really pleasant and it was a great experience for me personally, because before NFL Live, I was doing TV almost every day, but a variety of it, you know, not just NFL. And being on an NFL show basically just meant I had more time and energy to focus on the NFL, and not doing a million other things. So, you know, it's so hard to cover all 32 teams. And yes, to watch all the games, and I'm not going to lie and say I watch every single one of them. I'm not watching, you know, Bengals, Bears week 15 or whatever. But when you're on a football show, you do have more time to do that.
And it's crazy because I know we're supposed to watch every single thing all the time, but and fans really get angry if we don't watch every single play of every single game. There's no time to do that. Who does that? Who has time for that?
Well, I always tell people, if you are a fan of a team, like a real fan, and or you cover a team more especially, like if you're a blogger and you have a blog that covers, I don't know, the Vikings, you know more about them than me. Like you 100% do. You know, I used to feel that way when I was not a NFL analyst or even worked in sports. When I was just a crazy Seahawks fan on the internet, I would turn on national television. I'd be like, what are they talking about? They haven't seen, you know, Richard Sherman circa 2011 every down or whatever. And it's just, it's true. You don't, you know more than us. But sometimes a little distance also helps, I think. And taking the 50,000 foot view can be helpful as well.
Especially with the Dolphins and their offensive line.
We won't go there.
So you mentioned your non-traditional route to covering the NFL, because I think people would find that interesting. I don't think people know this. Maybe they do listen to this podcast, but you didn't start in sports, and your route was not even of other journalists who cover the NFL. Your route was different. Did you always want to get into the NFL eventually?
No. Did not at all. Never thought I would work in NFL or sports. I was just a football fan. And I was a business journalist for my career until I went to ESPN in 2014. So I was a reporter. And some of the tools are kind of similar. But I had no aspirations of turning my hobby, my passion, into a job.
When did you become, do you remember your first memory of a football fan? Like, I remember sort of mine when I was a kid with the UCLA Bruins. I went to all their games. I remember like a 1993, like Tennessee, 17-14 UCLA loss where Tennessee ran out the clock in a punt formation. Everyone at the Rose Bowl was booing. Like, I have these memories. Do you remember your first like Seattle Seahawks, I'm a fan of them memory?
My first football fandom memories are not of the Seattle Seahawks, although I was born into Seahawks fandom, but actually was Nebraska football. I'm a like kind of a lapsed college football fan, but I was born in the state of Nebraska. I was born in Omaha at Offutt Air Force Base. So I wasn't the only Nebraska fan in my family. My dad was a Michigan fan and a Washington fan. He went to Michigan. So I was, now I'm kind of like a, we've talked about this, a Huskies fan, but I'm like a Bulls fan.
So unfortunate.
Fan. You know, so I'm really a casual, just especially with the NFL, you know, but, I'm not passionate at all, but, yeah. So my first favorite football player was Tommy Frazier, which I think makes sense why I like option football so much and, dual threat quarterbacks, but my earliest memories are watching Tommy Frazier and those Nebraska teams.
It is crazy how the NFL, the quarterback position is now, you almost exclusively have to be dual threat. Like, you can't play in the NFL if you can't move anymore. I mean, it's quite remarkable how, and that shift happened over, I don't know, 8 years, 10 years, where just that's what you get now. You get guys that have to move, and it's totally changed the position. All right, let's get to your favorite quarterback, I would imagine, is Russell
Wilson.
It's
a good segue, though, because I think he was a big part of that change.
He was a big part. And he, by the way, was not like an option quarterback in college, right? It was Wisconsin, definitely was. NC State did a little bit of that. And then in Seattle, he's not an option quarterback either. I mean, like, they don't use him like they should, which is partly why we're here. Okay, so Russell Wilson, more vocal now. He wants one thing in the offense. Pete Carroll wants another thing in the offense. How did this get solved?
It's a little perplexing. I would say, by the way, Russell Wilson was an option quarterback 2012 when they drafted, and that was the read option revolution in 2012 with all those quarterbacks, but his running has kind of waxed and waned over the years, and he still runs pretty efficiently, just not in the same way he did early on. But as far as the dissatisfaction, it's hard to sort of diagnose a solution because he's been so vague. He, through his people who are then talking to reporters who are verbalizing whatever, it's sort of vague, right? I mean, we know he wants better protection. That he's explicitly said, I don't want to be sacked as much. Fine.
Who doesn't want to be? I mean, every quarterback doesn't want to be hit. Like, that's like not anything different than anyone else would say.
And you know, some people correctly say that Russell Wilson, his style of play, similarly to Deshaun Watson, does invite pressure. And as someone who's watched every single one of his, 400 sacks or whatever, a zillion, that's true. But they also have not, I wouldn't say failed to invest in the offensive line so much as made bad investments, you know, whether it's draft picks, signings, a lack of signings in free agency. The only really good thing they've done is the Dwayne Brown trade, which worked out immensely well. He's been fantastic for them. But that's the only thing we know. He has explicitly said, I want this to change. Because beyond that, I think what you're seeing is just a ton of speculation. People saying, well, he's unhappy with Pete Carroll and his play calling. But last year, they were one of the most pass-happy teams in the NFL. So, you know, and then they fired their offense coordinator. It's like, okay, well, then if was he unhappy with that? Or did he want a new coordinator? Is he unhappy with the Waldron hire? Like, what kind of offense does he want? It's all very unclear, I think. And then it's, I think, complicated too by some of the teams he's purportedly interested in, like Chicago. It's like, okay, if you want a better offensive line and a scheme and weapons, why the hell would you want to go to Chicago? So it's all very confusing. And the only like terra firma we have is the offensive line.
I'm glad you mentioned that because the teams he laid out, which were the Saints, Raiders, Bears, and one other team that he's not being traded to. There are four teams he's not going to. Like Seattle, Seattle can't get the return back they want if Russell goes to those places. So it feels like to me, A, you're right, doesn't know what he wants. B, but his representatives, and if you talk to people in Seattle, they're kind of upset at his agent. His agent's pumping this out there And they don't know why. Like, is it to raise his rep? Is it to get him in the news more? Is it like a PR thing? Because everything you said is true. That he can't be traded to the Bears or the Raiders or to the Saints. But he sort of wants out. Like, what? I'm confused by this. It does not make sense after 9 years to just go so public with this.
Right, and the Watson situation is so dissimilar. You know, some people have kind of pointed to that as like a quarterback going scorched earth, which he has. Justifiably. And there's just no parallel because, one, the Texans sucked. The Seahawks won their division last year. I understand that there's a lot of frustration with the team in the playoffs and some of the things that have happened, and we can talk about that. But the Texans sucked. They're going to suck next year with or without Deshaun Watson. And there's major cultural issues with ownership and consulting that do not apply in this situation. And they're very unique. And with Wilson, it's like, okay, if you're so unhappy, are you actually willing to hold out? There's been no indication that he's willing to do that. So why in God's name would Seattle entertain anything less than a top three pick or Deshaun Watson? Dolphins. That's it.
Yeah.
Those are the only things they should even consider. There's all this, they're taking calls. The Bears. Yeah, these first round picks are really going to help when you've got not just have you traded Russell Wilson, but you blew a nuclear size hole in your cap to do so. It makes no sense.
And we'll get to Deshaun Watson in a second. I think that Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson, I said that on Twitter, that would be a fair swap. I mean, just like you get a younger Russell Wilson, essentially.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Watson would like Carroll as much as maybe Wilson, who grew up kind of there. So, Russell Wilson wants better protection. You mentioned, they've tried to draft that position. They had a great offensive line that left. I still say trading Max Unger was really stupid, but they let him go. He went to New Orleans.
Yeah.
They got rid of that whole offensive line that won the Super Bowl. But when Russell Wilson says, I want more control of the roster, that to me, it just makes no sense. I don't know what that means.
No
player should have control about that. What does that mean? Are you going to go in there and be like, I want Allen Robinson and I want Juju. And I don't even know the top, every lineman always signs with someone else. I want this offensive lineman. What is he talking about? What does that mean?
Well, I think he was kind of, I'll step in there. I think he was kind of pushed into, it was the Dan Patrick interview. He was explicitly asked, okay, would you like to have more of a voice in these things? He was like, yeah. I kind of feel like that was just him saying, obviously he wants more protection and maybe drew a line between that and that, but he hasn't, I don't think there's been any explicit criticisms of the roster building, which you could criticize some of the things they've done, the Adams trade, whatever. The only thing that, again, I keep going back to this, the only thing that not only is he justified in being upset about, but is a concrete thing they can actually address is the offensive line, in particular, the interior of the offensive line, which to me was why they lost to the Rams. I mean, obviously Aaron Donald, it's unfair and they played him twice at the end. And I think that kind of threw everyone's perception of it, but that was a real problem down the stretch. And it's now a hole in their roster that they have to fix, center and left guard.
Well, it's a good draft to do that. And so maybe they take a shot or maybe another off the ball linebacker or running back. That's one of those two positions. I guess that's why he's upset, right? It's the same thing as Aaron Rodgers is upset. Look, we have a small window to win and you're drafting guys that don't explicitly help me, your best player, win. I can understand the frustration if that is actually what it is.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I'm totally with that.
Aaron Rodgers says it. Aaron Rodgers I don't like that you drafted a quarterback who's not going to play when we could have drafted T. Higgins or someone else who was there. And I agree with that. All right. So if you choose between Pete Carroll or Russell Wilson as a Seahawks fan, it's
Russell Wilson
team. Exactly, right? But never going to happen. They're never going to get rid of Pete Carroll.
I don't know.
Really?
But I also don't know that Pete Carroll is that he is Russell Wilson's problem. We're all just speculating about it. It's so frustrating. I hate this.
Yeah, but it's great for our job.
Psychoanalyzing. I know. I think what I hate though is I like having some sort of basis in reality to argue about. And with Wilson, and it's so frustrating. It's when your significant other is, you know, they're angry at you, but they're not saying they're angry at you. And you're like, okay, yes. I we're going to have an argument, but I don't even know what we're fighting about. That's how I feel about Russell Wilson right now. I don't know what we're fighting about other than guards. Go sign Corey Linsley or Joe Tooney. Fine.
And I mean, that could obviously stop it. The other quarterback in the news, obviously Deshaun Watson, reports, I think yesterday, the day before, that they're not going to trade him. I've said all along, I don't think they're trading him. Like, they have no need to. Yeah, they don't have to trade him. Like, you're going to. So I think Carson Palmer is the only guy in recent history that sat out an entire year for that position, right? You're basically calling his bluff. All right, sit out a whole year. Mm. And I also think there's pressure from other owners to not give in to Deshaun Watson.
I think that could be true, but I would trade him. So I disagree with you there.
No, I think they're. I would trade him, but I don't think they're going to do it.
You just are saying you're what you don't think. Yeah. Well, I think that'd be stupid because, like I said, you're going to suck regardless of whether you have him or not. Even if, let's say, he holds out and you get him back, it doesn't make a difference. You're going to suck, right? So here's my thought process. Right now, this quarterback draft is really strong. Everyone agrees. Yes. Next year, significantly less strong. If you're Houston, your chances of getting his replacement are much higher now, whether it's a quarterback in the draft or Tua or whatever, right? Like getting one of those top three or four picks, your chances are better now than they ever will be of finding the guy. So you should just rip the Band-Aid, do it. You're rebuilding anyways. You got to give up on the idea that, like, because even if you keep him, you're so effed because you did such a bad job with your roster. You got a new administration, of course. There's no pathway to them being better, even if they keep him, I think, in the next 2 years. So if I'm them, you got to blow it up and accept it and just work with him to get the best offer possible.
To me, the best place for him to go and make this work for everyone is the Dolphins, right? The Dolphins are closest, in my opinion, to the Jets in winning. He'll like playing for Brian Flores. Is that the best spot for both parties, the Dolphins?
I think so. I was just looking at offseason needs for the worst teams in the NFL. So I'm doing my podcast this week. And I was actually surprised by how barren the Jets were. Like, I knew they were bad, obviously. The Jets, terrible, you know, record or whatever.
Roster's bad.
The roster's bad, man. Like, even if you get Watson, that there's so many holes in cornerbacks, the defense, they don't have pass rushers. Even I like, obviously Becton's great, but the rest of the offensive line, full of question marks. They don't have running backs, rebuilding skill player. Like, it is not a good situation. So from Houston's point of view, of course, I'd love to get that number two pick, but from Watson's point of view, you better hope you end up, he has that no trade clause, but Miami would be the spot.
I'd argue the Jets shouldn't make this trade just because their roster is so barren. You trade away all those draft picks. Jets fans don't like when I say this, but like, why would you look at your roster, man? I'd just ride it with Darnold one more year, trade him away to San Francisco or somewhere else and just stink again. And who is next year's top quarterback? Do we have any idea? I don't even know.
I forgot. I
like, that's bad, right? That's more like,
it's not a good look. If I'm the Jets, I would take a guy this year, but I do think I see your point about trading him because you're you're Houston.
Or take Fields at two. Yeah. Okay. Trade Sam Darnold, take Fields at two, but you can't give up the draft picks, right, for Deshaun Watson. You just can't do it.
Yeah. You're going to be kind of like Houston if you trade for him. Yeah. It's like you're swapping, you know, like, okay, great, we got the quarterback, but like our team sucks. Yeah. You know?
The other team that's intriguing in this whole quarterback royale, and this is the NFL is the best because this never stops. This is really the first offseason I think I can remember where, literally from the first week of the offseason, there was quarterback news with the Stafford-Goff trade, is the 49ers. I like Kyle Shanahan a lot. I think that he is a fantastic coach. The 1 year at a healthy quarterback, he made the Super Bowl. What do they do at quarterback?
So this was a team where I thought, first of all, I was like, go all out for Watson, right? Do whatever it takes. I don't know why Houston would do that over, you know, like when we're talking about Miami or even New York potentially. But they are, like, I don't think they're a quarterback away. I thought they were, but then I started, they've got a ton of free agents leaving. Their secondary is just starting over. Salah's obviously out. They're still going to be okay, but I think if like a Trey Lance is there for them, I would really like that for, and then, you know, maybe wait till next year. I'm not sure that outside of Watson, there's an upgrade over Jimmy G available to them outside of the draft.
Should someone go in and trade for Dak Prescott, or should he just stick with the franchise tag? Because I know that your buddy Dan Orlovsky, who has quite possibly the worst food takes I've ever seen in my life, he is he's anti-Dak, right? Anti-Dak. Yes. And but I feel like Dak, even with the Cowboys, can provide value. But why doesn't someone go trade for him? Can't you get him cheaper than you would normally right now?
Well, so they're going to – it would be a tag and trade, right? So, like, they would tag him and then trade him. And I think with Dak, you don't want him on that tag. So you would have to trade for him explicitly with an intention to do an extension. And then you can spread the money around, much in the way that the Cowboys should do. I think there's a lot of teams that would – should do that. I still think he's going to end up in Dallas just because I think they've backed themselves into a corner. But yeah, I think Dak Prescott would make a lot of teams in the NFL contenders.
How good is he? Like, how good do you, like, is he a Super Bowl winning quarterback?
Yeah, I think he is. I don't think he's like a top five quarterback in the NFL. I think he's a top 10 quarterback. Maybe with top 5 years, depending on the pieces around him. But he's absolutely good enough to win a Super Bowl to me.
Is there going to become an inflection point in the NFL when teams basically, and I'll use the Browns for example. Like, if I were the Browns, and I mentioned this to you about 8 weeks ago, I would go all in. If you think Justin Fields or Lawrence or Zach Wilson are better than Baker Mayfield, I would go all in. Like the Chiefs did a couple years ago, trade for the quarterback and not sign Baker Mayfield to a long-term deal. We all know what's going to happen. They'll sign him to a long-term deal, they'll turn to Jared Goff, and they'll get rid of him in 3 years. Is there going to be an inflection point where teams just say, hey, that's the path forward. We can't pay these quarterbacks that are 10 to 15, 10 to 20, because like you're kind of stuck, right? Like you have to pay them because you don't really have a choice, but then you're not going to win either.
Bill Barnwell was calling for the Rams to do this with Goff. I don't know if you remember. It was like a... he wrote a whole column about it. He made a Super Bowl,
though. Baker hasn't even been there.
Yeah, I know. I think, well, right, this is, it's so hard with these quarterbacks in that range. And I'm arguing, by the way, that Dak Prescott is above that range. And Orlovsky would be on the other side. I think that's the dividing line. Like, do you ever pay a quarterback? And if so, how good does he have to be to get that big contract relative to a rookie? I think like it's obviously a moving target. It also depends on the talent of your coaching staff and like the team you've got around them and whatever, but there's no guaranteeing you're going to get a rookie who can even play at an above average level.
But you're also not winning a Super Bowl with Baker either. Like, I mean, I know it's hard for Cleveland to say that, right? I mean, obviously they just made the playoffs. They just played the Chiefs. Like, the game was much closer, I think Chiefs fans would like to admit. If that ball doesn't go out the back of the end zone, it's 16-10, Browns get the ball at the half. Like, it's a little different game. But it's hard to admit that as a team. We can all see it coming. Everyone knows what's about to happen. But if you're in that organization, you think to yourself, hey, we'll upgrade here, we'll upgrade there, and we'll be back there next year. I get why teams go all in for these guys. They don't have a choice.
I do think there are deals that we see that teams sign that are much like the Jimmy G deal or the Derek Carr deal that are much more team friendly and do represent a sort of middle ground, right? Between the Goff-Wentz deals where they're so hard to get out of and there's so much guaranteed money. We've seen the team-friendly quarterback deals that have big sticker shock but are actually somewhat flexible. And I do wonder if there'll be maybe perhaps more teams can push that on like a quarterback like Baker. I don't know if that's possible. I kind of doubt it. In the same way that you were talking about how like owners don't want Houston to give into Dak Prescott, I am like agents are not like, you know, they don't want, and they want the quarterback market to stay what it is. But I don't, I just don't see a team doing that. I think, who do we've got coming out? We've got Baker and Lamar.
Baker, yeah.
Josh Allen. That's going to be
a big deal. The Ravens are in the kind of the same spot too, man. Like, I know people, it's not cool to like say the Ravens You know, the Ravens don't win playoff games. Quarterback wins. But, like, I keep explaining to people the difference, in my opinion. People obviously bash Mahomes for his poor play in the Super Bowl. People are like, well, and, well, you don't get Lamar gets more backlash. Well, the reason why is because the offense looks vastly different in the playoffs than it does in the regular season. That's why people get on the Ravens. Like, I think the Ravens are kind of stuck, too.
Well, the Ravens and the Browns are a perfect A-B test for, like, putting your quarterback in a good position. I mean, I'm not – Lamar's not is not Deshaun Watson or whatever. He's not in that tier of, like, God level elevating the team around him, you know, and very few quarterbacks are. But, like, the Browns have done everything you can they can for Baker Mayfield to succeed. Quarterback-friendly offense, coach, scheme, weapons, offensive line crushes. The Ravens, that by the end of the year, it was like Lamar Jackson with the team on his back, right? And even if
their offensive line was beat up, no wide
so I think you have to factor that into, like, considering their relative value.
I will give one more year. I think the Ravens have to go get, like, Allen Robinson. You get a big wide receiver. Like, you just have to get give yourself 1 year with a stud wide receiver, right? If it doesn't work this year, if you get yourself that wide receiver, and it doesn't work this year, do you consider, like, hey, this? We tried it. It just didn't work. Or just kind of just keep going until it's over.
I would argue also they could consider change an offensive coordinator before that they would change.
Yes. The passing game is very limited. And that's what I want to see, too. Like, I want to see Lamar because he played a pro-style offense in college. And they don't do – but maybe it's a wide receiver issue. So I'm excited to see – I mean, everyone's going to get paid. Baker will get paid. Lamar will get paid. Josh Allen will get paid. And I think they're all going to end up kind of in the same spot, right? Josh Allen, what we saw last year is probably like the top, right? Or not?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would think so. And that's not a diss on Josh Allen. Like any quarterback who plays at that level, very few are able to sustain that kind of performance over many years.
Do you have your hot take for Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence yet? Have you gone that far in your draft prep?
Well, no, okay. So Lawrence is my unequivocal number one. So I've prepped the quarterbacks. I'm still working on my draft prep, but I've gotten through the quarterbacks. Wilson's just a goddamn black box. How much have you watched of him?
I haven't watched film of him. I watched him play so far. I've watched more Trevor Lawrence. But like, I just think that the Zach Wilson hype is because we've gotten tired of talking about Trevor Lawrence being so good, and we're trying to find something else. Because, you know, it's funny. People hold Trevor Lawrence's playoff games against him. Oh, he didn't play as well against Alabama or against Ohio State. Zach Wilson lost to Coastal Carolina. Like, are we going to use that? He played like Louisiana State Tech this season. Like, we can't do that. We can't do that, folks.
And that's what makes it so hard to evaluate him because, frankly, all the quarterbacks in this draft, by the way, are on, like, Trey Lance is the same way. When you watch those games, like against, you know, Boise State,
Weber State, or
James Madison, or I don't know, his team was dominant too. Even though it's FCS, like the relative, like the biggest shock to me watching Zach Wilson is how good BYU's offensive line was. I had no idea.
They're really crushing dudes.
Like, and they have it's a really cool, fun offense, which again, I had no idea. Like, I fully concede that outside of the Coastal game, I didn't watch a single BYU game before I started my prep. And it's like, obviously he's got a freak show arm and more mobility than I thought. But in terms of like a prediction for him based on the context he was playing, it's really hard to do.
And that's the thing about, you know, we love what Pat Mahomes and Rodgers can do outside the pocket, right? Even like a Deshaun or Wilson we talked about already. But like, Justin Fields just staying in the pocket and making throws excites me more than Zach Wilson running around and chucking the ball deep, right? Like, aren't in rhythm plays, shouldn't we value those more than wild out of the pocket plays that guys make?
That's a really good point. I mean, I would say Wilson is a bit of a home run hitter. You know, he's kind of like looking. It's interesting to me. And my friend Ben Solak wrote a great piece about Wilson being this like a stud. Everyone thinks he's like, oh, of course, the Jets, LaFleur, Shanahan offense, you know, BYU
offense. He would not do.
Yeah. No. When you watch him, he's not content settling for those middle of the field layups that, you know, you'd want your quarterback to do in that offense. Like he is going hunting, right? And often, and this is part because of the level of competition, part because of his arm, he caught the big game, and that's really cool. But I actually think Justin Fields makes more sense in that kind of offense than a Zach Wilson, which I don't know. It seems like Wilson's gaining hype over him at this point. But I will say, Jeff, I think they're all sensible first round quarterbacks. They all have really cool like attributes and upside. Like I watch them all, and I don't think there's an obvious dud in the bunch.
Well, the thing about these quarterbacks now is like they tend to all be sort of like manageable in the NFL, where all these guys I think are going to be bust. Like they're just not. Like Josh Allen, for example, Lamar Jackson. Like I look at these guys coming out of college, like, well, completion percentage, not going to be a lot of passes, can't. And then you come in the NFL, it's like, doesn't none of that matter? Justin Herbert, right? I watched him play 4 years in the NFL. I was much college. I was much higher on him than other people were. I didn't see this happening. Like these guys just come in, and Joe Burrow, let's let it rip early on. And I feel like now if I say, hey, X guy is not going to do well, it's just not, it feels like that's not the case
you
anymore.
Can't these guys really, are just, they're and ready that's to that's play. Well, and it's also because of the NFL. Like, I think there was an NFL where all the quarterbacks were describing would have busted, frankly, like 10 years ago. And now coaching staffs, that like just NFL offenses have finally, not only has there been a lot of trickle up from college, and of course we talk about it all the time, but they've just gotten a lot better at tailoring their offenses to the abilities of the quarterbacks as they come in. And that makes it, less likely, certainly, that a mobile quarterback will bust, just because there's that floor already. And you've got a coach, typically now, right, who knows how to use it and is willing to use it. Like, Michael Vick wasted years of his career because he played for coaches that didn't understand how to design offense around him.
I play in these offenses. Like, it used to be where you just kind of do, like, the coach had his plan. That's what he always did. It didn't matter who his personnel was. Yeah. And he just, and now obviously we see even with Andy Reid and Sean, all these guys. I mean, Sean Payne's running this stuff with Taysom Hill, which I would argue is ridiculous. But nonetheless, like, older coaches decided to run something different. Yeah. Andy Reid's been a fascinating all in doing this for a long time. All right, a couple more questions before we get you out of here. Overtime rules became a thing last week. The Ravens proposing. Okay, I am of the opinion, and I know it's an opinion that's not very popular, that overtime should be sudden death, okay? I played 60 minutes, all right? You've had plenty of opportunities to score, stop the other team. Overtime should not be fair. The game is not fair, right? Nothing about the game is fair. I'm good with overtime being the way it is. Obviously, a lot of people think I'm crazy. The Ravens proposed this convoluted thing. I read it somewhere. I can't explain it. Does overtime?
I can try to explain it if you want.
Please try to explain it. Cause I'm not smart enough to explain that. That's why we had you.
I just want to get back to the sudden death thing. So you, as a Chiefs fan, you were cool with the AFC Championship and Patrick Mahomes not getting the ball and the Chiefs losing that year to New England.
New England converted 3 3rd-and-10s.
You didn't mind. You weren't angry at all. You were like,
"No, I'm fine.
Not." No, that's the Chiefs way the cookie
scored,
crumbles.
And the Chiefs should have scored in the first half in that game. But here's the thing: that year, great example, right? In that year, two overtime title games. The road team won one, was it that year? The road team won both. Or the next year, what was the year? The Saints Rams was that year too, right? Yeah. So both road teams won in overtime. One got the coin toss, and one did not. Like, it's 50-50.
The Ravens, actually, I don't have their proposal in front of me, but I think it's like 58% of the teams that win go on to win, which is not ideal.
The coin toss.
Yeah, like, since the rules have been changed.
I know that the college rule, the winner of the coin toss won most. In the NFL, it was a little bit less than college football, and everyone wants a college football plan. All right, so Ravens' plan is...
All right, so here...
Go ahead.
Okay, so there's a coin toss, but the idea is to minimize the importance of the coin toss and put more on actual football and decision-making. So let's say you, Jeff Schwartz, you're the Chiefs and I'm the Patriots. Or you be the Patriots and I'll be the Chiefs.
Okay.
So... You win, What you get to do is decide where to spot the ball. Then I get to choose whether I'm on offense or defense. But you're driving the length of the field regardless. So people are, that's something that confused people because they're like, well, if you spotted the 10, wouldn't you just play off? No, it's like, no. You have to go either like anywhere between, you know, 50 to 100 yards, whatever. So you're playing me, Patrick Mahomes. You're like, okay, Mina's probably going to go on offense. It's sudden death, by the way. And it's a field goal of sudden death.
Okay. So, yes.
Okay. So Mina's probably going to go on offense because she's got Patrick Mahomes. So I'm going to spot her at the 5 and dare her to play offense. And then let's say I don't convert a first down. You basically won.
Yeah.
Because then you just kick a field goal. That's how it works.
So there's no punt. There's no punting in this overtime?
No. No. You just spot the ball.
No.
So you're when you win, you are basically, you get to decide where to spot with an anticipation of what the other team's going to do.
Right. So ball at the 5. Let's say that I choose ball at the 5. You choose offense. You can then, you know, now it's 4th down. You can punt the ball, right? You don't have to go for it on 4th down?
Yes.
Okay. So you can punt the ball in field goal range.
Yeah.
I saw that someone put up that
so you wouldn't 38 win yard line. Sorry about that.
The 38 yard line was like the ideal spot to put the ball.
I don't know if this is in the proposal or someone. They're thinking it's probably going to be around like the 15, 13.
The 15 to 13 yard line is the ideal spot to put the ball.
Yeah.
This is, I mean,
but it's
I
fun. Okay. Because let's say you're like, you know what? Okay. Mina Kimes. She's the Chiefs. Or let's say you're the Chiefs on the pass and it was the AFC Championship.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, I'm going to put Mina Kimes, Bill Belichick at the 5. And I'm Belichick and Brady. And I'm like, you know what? F it. I think we can get this. We're going to get offense. And let's say we drive and score and win and you never get the ball. Yeah. We kick the field goal. Then the next day, instead of Chiefs fans being all pissy about, you know, like the coin toss, people are much more likely to talk about how crazy it was that I drove that far.
I mean, in that AFC Championship game, the Patriots drove 80 yards for touchdown and converted third and tens. Like, it's the same thing. We choose to focus on the stupid coin toss out of all things about it. I mean, look, it's definitely different, and to your point and what you said on Twitter is exactly right. It will move the talking point from blaming the coin toss to blaming everything else. But once everyone figures out the 14-yard line is the place to put the ball, then all that discussion is gone. Oh, well, he put the right spot, and like he went whatever X amount of yards to get there, 60 yards to kick a field goal. I don't know. It's never going to pass. This is all fun to talk about, but the conservative NFL is passing this 0%.
I also just love that the Ravens, the team that has Justin Tucker, proposed field goal sudden death, guys.
Just put it at the 43 and we'll win the game. All right. Last kind of topic. So what I find so not fascinating about your Twitter feed, but just kind of your ascension, is that you are very analytical, but you also take the approach of like a player too. Like, you watch the film and you combine both those, which I think makes you unique, right? Like, there's the analytics crowd that's like, analytics, I'm not going to take into the opinion of a player. There's players, obviously, they're very boneheaded. And I used to be one of those. I don't think I am anymore. How do you combine both of those? Because I think it's a very sweet spot to be in, where you know the numbers, but also I think you are very in tune with how players view the game as well.
Thank you. Well, you just watch. And so the Seahawks are a great example, actually, of this, because you know, there's a lot of, in the analytics community or whatever, there's, I think, maybe an excessive amount of focus on early down pass rate. And, you know, we got to pass, play action, pass, never run. I watched the Seahawks very closely second half last season. First, they did, I think there's like a narrative out there that they, like, Pete Carroll came down and they stopped passing. No, they kept passing a lot on early downs. You know, they went from, like, the most in the NFL to, like, top 10 or whatever. But watching them, and then as teams were playing more middle field open coverages against them, it wasn't just cover two, teams were also giving them light boxes and basically inviting them to run the football and anticipating that they were going to pass in early downs. And when you watched, there were a fair amount of games where in the second half of the season where watching them, I felt like they should run more on early downs and take what defenses
were giving
them.
Are you allowed to say that? Is the Seattle Twitter going to come after you now?
So I guess what I just bring up that example to say, like, I do believe generally teams should pass more on early downs. It is more efficient. But I also think you have to watch and see. It's not only just about, like, what are our skills? What are we good at? Whatever. It's also about, like, okay, I'm going to watch and see what does this defense look like? How is the game script actually playing out? And consider all of those things as well.
See, that's what you're, thank you. That's what you're supposed to. I do think the analysts crowd gets a little beat up sometimes. Like, if you actually talk to a lot of them, which I do, I think it's, I like to learn about what other, how people view the game. I think, especially the, a lot of the numbers are very valuable. Like, they're very, they're great when you go on TV, not so much. It's hard to spit out EPA on television, but especially like written content or podcasts, it's, you know, they're great numbers to have. They get a little bit of bad rap, right? I mean, there's a lot of back and forth on social media from like the football guys' analytics. I feel like we're closer to the middle than probably it feels on Twitter.
I think both extremes are really bad, and most people on Twitter are bad generally. And like the tone of the discourse is not good. But like for me, how I feel about bringing analytics to sports media, not actually play calling or being involved in teams, is just let's use statistics correctly. Like, I've made it my life mission to get my colleagues to stop saying when a team carries the ball, runs the ball X amount of times, they're going to win or whatever.
By the way, I did have a coach who said, an OC in my career who said, who did the rule of 53. Like, 53, if we run the ball plus completions over 53, we're going to win the game.
Not great. So those are things I think that, and you know, like all the players that I work with, Marcus Spears, Dan Orlovsky, Ryan Clark, they think it's dumb too. They get it. Like Dan and Marcus are fully on the, you don't have to establish the run for play action to work. And they know that not just because statistics have told them, but also we have watched the effing Buffalo Bills like last year. Like they barely ran the ball and play action was still working. So I think a lot of this comes through just conversations born of both watching and bringing numbers to the table and trying to find a happy medium.
It still kind of hurts my heart a little bit when people say that, you don't need to run the ball because to play action pass, because, and I've said this many times before, is, you know, defenses read run to pass. I mean, that's why it still works, because linebackers still read the run first. So even if you don't run the football and you fake the run, they still read that first. And they still step up, and then you can hit it behind them. But secondly, offensive linemen. Yeah.
No, I was gonna say I love talking to linebackers about that. They're key, you know, like when they're watching the offense. Like it's very nuanced, and again, it's not as simple as like you have to run X times for it to work or have this level of running back. It's more okay, like what is the actual flow of the game. What is the offensive line doing? What are our expectations based on watching this team, et cetera?
And that's where the part about, you know, why is an offensive lineman, I think it is important, again, not to run the ball 25 times, but to kind of establish the idea of run blocking. Because to me, it's about the run block. The initial sell, first of all, helps the whole offense operate, and because it helps the linebacker step up, safeties step up. But you only do that when you're confident that you can actually run block. And so if you do some of it throughout the game, then when you go into your block, when you actually sell the run, you have to sell. A lot of times you're on an island, like the right tackle, if you're running a play action to the right, open side, weak side zone, he's by himself. Well, guess what? If you've run the ball a little bit throughout the game, that block is just easier. It's just easier for you, and you feel more confident doing it. And the linebacker who's keying the guards, so to me, there is some value. And I know that it's hard to explain that, because unless you've done it, maybe you don't feel that way. But that's why I think there is a little bit of value still in running the ball instead of play action pass.
I think, and just running the ball, period. Was it the Bills in the playoffs this year? Where like, I was like, man, the absence of Zach Moss is really being felt by the end with them. And like I said, I was talking about the Seahawks earlier. You know, it does matter. And it's not, you can't pass it 1,000% of the time. And things that are happening on the field. Players get tired.
I mean, it's more for the defense.
That can't be quantified or factored in.
if you throw the ball too much in the NFL, you know, and you get, you know, a bunch of three and outs, like your defense is exhausted. That's what happened all the way back with Chip Kelly way back in the day.
Yeah, just, right.
His defense played two full games, more snaps than any other defense in the NFL. You just get tired. And so there is, look, I get it, man. Passing the ball, I'm a Chiefs fan. They don't care to run the football. I've watched them for years now. I remember, I ever told a story. I saw, they should have run the ball in the Super Bowl a little
That's
bit.
That's what
more.
I was just about to say. You and I talked about that. We both thought in the first half. But it wasn't, I mean, again, I hate this thing.
Three more times.
It's like literally three more times. We're talking about like four drives max and like two or three plays where it's like, hey, can I get around there? No.
Before the Super Bowl they won in Miami, I had lunch with, or dinner with my brother. And I went up to the team hotel. We ate like it's at the mall, at some restaurant at the mall. And I remember asking him distinctly, like, hey, you just like don't care about running the ball anymore, right? And he just like giggles. He goes, "Nope, not at all." Like they just, you know, they just morphed into. And Andy Reid forever has never really wanted to run the football. He does it just because I think he sort of has to. I think he'd throw the ball every play if he could. In the Super Bowl, it did hurt him. But to your point, it was like three or four more times. It wasn't like you need 17 rushes from your running back. You're not going to win the NFL. You will. I mean, very specific times you can do that. So look, I'm all for scoring points. I like running the football still. I'm just going to my big fat offensive lineman self will never get over it. All right, Mina, thank you for joining us. This was fabulous. And enjoy the, I guess, the Russell Wilson sweepstakes happening, not happening.
I'm ready for it to end.
Are you ready for Mariners baseball? Ichiro was taking BP
today. I saw that. So great. Being a Mariners fan is great because you just have zero expectations ever. It's a good way to live life.
Aren't they expanding playoffs? Like you should get in at some point.
Next year is so they got a lot of young. I don't know if you're a baseball. The farm system's been really good.
I'm a Giants baseball fan. I was hardcore when they were good. Yeah, when they were good, it was great. I mean, I stayed up every night on the East Coast and watched at least three or four innings of every single game. And they just suck. So I don't pay attention as much. I mean, I don't know if I can name you like four players on their team heading into, I probably should learn. I mean, I do like baseball. I'm at this point, I'm more anti Dodgers. Like I just don't want the Dodgers to win like that.
I'm kind of out on the Dodgers now too. So
why are you out all of a sudden?
Who did they? Bauer. I don't like him. He sucks.
He said something the other day. He pitched one eye closed. Like
he says the dumbest stuff.
He
just thinks he's like so great. I don't know.
That doesn't
find
help
him
you.
Annoying. I know. He's so annoying. I just find him like very self-aggrandizing and irritating. So
well, we can root against the Dodgers, and you can root for your Nets when they play the Lakers in the finals, and we'll be adversaries.
Oh man, I honestly, that whole Nets thing has gone, it's kind of like performance art now where it's kind of I'm actually a Nets. Like it's so weird. I can't tell the difference between troll. It started as shit posting because I just love shit posting. And then it turned into a real thing where like Zach Lowe's like, can you come on my podcast this week and talk about the Nets? And I was like, fuck, that's like the most popular NBA podcast. People are going to be so mad at me. So
did you do it?
No, I'm not yet, but I'm going to. So I actually have been watching. They're really fun to watch.
They're good.
Yeah, it's been fun. Yeah.
Three Hall of Famers on one team. Of course, they'd be great. All right, Mina. Thank you. I appreciate it. That was Mina Kimes of ESPN NFL Live and the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. We really appreciate her coming on. That was wonderful. Got a tiny bit of baseball talk in there as well. Maybe we'll do some baseball moving forward. Some basketball. Some more gambling. I don't know. We'll see what the future holds for the podcast. Please rate, review, subscribe. Really appreciate it. And we'll be back later this week. Talk to you guys later.